Are you where you want to be in your career? If your answer is not really, discover how the number one ranked online MBA from the Kelley School of Business can get you there. Your dedicated career coach will work with you to create a path to advancement and put it into action. 64% of Kelley Direct online MBA students received a promotion while in the program or within 6 months of graduation. To start building momentum for your career, visit go.iu.edu/KDMBA.
Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and in this special episode of the podcast, we're going to tackle a subject that many of our listeners are curious about, and that is post-MBA career outcomes. How does the job hunting process work when you start an MBA, and especially for jobs in consulting, tech, and other popular target fields? And what are the things that one could be doing even before starting business school to ensure a great post-MBA career outcome? So I know that many of you listening are probably knee-deep in MBA applications or interview prep and all that goes into getting into business school, but I can assure you that listening to this episode is going to pay big dividends as you chart your path beyond business school. So I'm obviously not exactly an expert in this area, so I've invited an expert to join me as we explore this stuff. And his name is Eric D. Johnson. He's known across the graduate management education industry for his innovative work in career services. He's actually the executive director of career services at Indiana University's Kelley School of Business. He's the co-director of the Kelley Leadership Academy. He teaches leadership and organizational behavior within the business school there, and he's a certified executive coach. I also know that in an earlier life, he served as the CMO of Eli Lilly in the UK. He's worked in retail banking, and the list goes on. He has an MBA from the Kelley School and a BS in finance from Florida State University. Welcome, Eric Johnson.
Hey, Graham. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being here.
Oh, I need your help because this is, you know, our listeners have been asking that we talk about like sort of what happens, you know, how can I get to business school and be ready, you know, to sort of figure out my career plan. And I'm just not, that's not, you know, I know a lot about admissions, but I'm not, it's not my area of expertise. So I'm really glad that you could join. Before we kind of dive in, I just wondered if you'd be willing to share a little bit about your background and like how you ended up in this role at Kelley with our listeners.
Well, yeah, sure. I'd be happy to. I mean, you hit, I think, a lot of the titles as you did that intro, which I don't know. I hear that and I wonder who that guy is. It always sounds so much more impressive than I certainly feel. What I guess I'll add to the story is that recruiting and growing and developing talent have always been passions of mine. When I was working at Eli Lilly and Company, I was fortunate enough to have more than a dozen of my employees get promoted during my tenure. I thought that Lilly in particular did a really great job of training us as leaders to think about talent management, developmental action plans, succession planning, thinking about how to match individuals' skills with career paths and their along with their passions and their interests. We spent a lot of time thinking about how to help people develop areas where maybe they were weak or they didn't have a lot of experience. And while doing all of that, I also played a very active role in recruiting MBAs to come to Eli Lilly. And for a stretch was actually the lead recruiter back to the Kelley School of Business. And so in addition to having been a student and been a coach, which I am now, I've also been a recruiter. And that 360 degree view has always been some of the work I enjoyed the most. And so a few years ago, I guess a decade ago now, an opportunity opened up at the Kelley School of Business to come back and do some teaching, which I love, and come on as a coach, which I also love. And it was just too good to be true. And so I took it. A few years after joining the school, I was promoted into the head of the office position that I hold now. And over the last 7 years or so, we've really tried to evolve and grow and bring a lot of those corporate principles around talent management to the work that we do here and prepare students for a market that just changes a lot,
right,
you know, every month. And so it's been a lot of fun, and I'm certainly enjoying it.
So I'd love to know, like, what is a day in the life like of a career services officer? And let's hold aside the pandemic, I guess, for the time being. Like, what do you do? You know, what does it look like? Because I think our listeners know a lot about what admissions officers are doing. You know, they're often, you know, pitching the school or reading applications. But what does your role look like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think it's actually vastly different than what most soon-to-be MBA students have experienced in their life. You know, I think as 2 points of reference, I mean, first of all, I think for a lot of us when we were undergraduates, our experience with career services was very transactional and probably somewhat minimal, right? There was somebody who reviewed our resume, maybe even an upperclassman. There was a format to do some mock interviews. Somebody arranged some events, and that was about it. And I would say, actually, when I was an MBA student, it wasn't that much different. And this is 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now I would say the number one role of somebody who's in career services is to be a coach. We spend an enormous amount of time one-on-one with each individual student, really trying to understand their story, their vision, what they need to do and work on in order to help bring that vision to life. It's a lot of empathy. It's a lot of listening. It's a lot of cheerleading. It is a lot of advice and coaching. I mean, those things are still there as well. You know, the day might look similar, right? Like every day, one of my coaches might come in and find they've got 5 meetings with students, but the experience is different every single day because every student is different. Mm-hmm. There's also a huge emphasis on content development and delivery. So we're constantly trying to put on workshops around case interviews or workshops around networking. We spend a lot of time connecting with employers and helping both employers figure out how best to fill their roles with talent, but then also how best to present themselves to students. And, you know, those don't look like the old, you know, corporate presentation type events anymore. It's a lot of coffee chats and a lot of innovative ways like ice cream day and things like that, you know, pre-COVID, of course, to help companies really put their products and their culture on display in new and different ways. And so those are the things we do right now. We coach, we provide a tailored experience to every student. We do our best to try to, you know, keep their skills up to date through workshops, and we try to help companies bring folks on board that are the best fits for them.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, and I think obviously, you know, there's some MBA students who probably come into an MBA program with a really clear sense, you know, of what they want to do. And then there are others who, you know, they want to explore, they need even more, you know, help trying to figure out like where they're best suited over the longer term. But speaking of those who kind of know what they want, I cannot even tell you the quantity of candidates who say they want to work in strategy consulting on clearadmit.com. And it's just, that's like the number one thing. Maybe technology is a close second, right? But so strategy consulting is always one of these goals that candidates have. Can you shed some light on how the recruiting process works? Because people are debating on the site often, and these are all people, you know, pre-MBA. They're talking about, oh, do I need a really good GMAT or GRE score in order to go work for a top consulting firm? What's a case interview? Like, so there's a lot of like chatter about some of the things that may go into it, but could you just lay out like what's the overall process look like if someone does want to pursue strategy consulting?
Totally, Graham. And if it's okay, I'd like to address one of the other things that you said in there, because I the point about a lot of people know what they want and a lot of people know what they don't. That's true. And also, I think a lot of people that think they know what they want ultimately end up changing their mind. And I want to let folks know, you know, pre-MBA, that's actually totally okay. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I say is that what all of our students have in common is all of them are running. They're either running from their last job or they're running towards their next job. And typically in the first month or so that they're here, I would say 90% are really just running from the job they had. They're really clear about why they left the position that they were in before their MBA program, whether it was the salary, the location, the boss, the industry, the upwards potential, et cetera. But outside of being able to name an industry or a title, they're not really clear on what they want to do. And I think what you're highlighting here is one of the more common examples. Students who say, well, I want to get into strategy consulting. And a lot of them say that before they get to an MBA program because they don't really know what it is. Mm-hmm. The perception pre-MBA is that strategy consulting is the art of coming up with really great ideas and giving them to other firms and making their business better. And the reality is that strategy consulting is an awful lot of data analysis, PowerPoint slides, listening to your client and their needs, trusting that they actually know their business better than you do, but helping them make a better decision, right? Strategy is the art of choice. And when a business is making, is facing a choice, like, do I buy this small company or do I try to start this line of business on my own, right? When a company is in that position, sometimes they like to have some help thinking through that decision. And that's what strategy consulting really is. It's the art of helping companies make choice through data analysis and helping them with thought process. And so what I think is really important for students that want to get into that is they need to start thinking about, well, what are the kinds of choices that I can inform, right? What are some of the industries that I'm interested in? What are some, you know, whether that's mergers and acquisitions or whether that's, you know, line extensions in consumer packaged goods or whatever, you know, getting really clear about what kinds of businesses I want to help and what kinds of choices I want to help drive can really help a student decide whether or not consulting is for them. So that's just some things that I want to highlight, because strategy consulting isn't really the thing that most people think it is. And actually, I would argue that a lot of students that go into things like supply chain consulting or tech consulting are doing as much work in strategy as anybody else, because they're helping people improve a process or they're helping people outsource a line of business or service or something like that. Getting into consulting these days, honestly, Graham, it doesn't really require much in the way of GMATs or GREs. That's a hangover from 15 or 20 years ago. And as schools begin to look at other ways to recruit students, fewer and fewer have GMAT scores. And I think consulting firms have started to recognize that there are students who have unbelievably positive and tangible skills like interpersonal communication, charisma, persuasion, the ability to think through complicated problems and deal with change, and a GMAT score of 600. And if you were to ask them, would you rather have someone who's sort of, you know, cold and linear in their thinking with a GMAT score of 780, or someone who really relates well to others and a GMAT score of 600, they'll take the second person every single day. So probably the biggest thing you need to do is you've got to work on, like, how do you get along with others? How do you convince people or influence people, especially those that don't report to you? And I think what case interviews do is they give candidates an opportunity to demonstrate the ways that they think and also the ways that they work with other people. Because it's not typically like an interrogation, right, where the person from the firm across the table is trying to like grill you on a problem. It's actually like, how do you engage your interviewer in the dialogue that you're having about this problem so you can get some information from them, you can show how you work well with others, then you can also demonstrate your thought process as you're working through the problem, and of course some of your analytical skills with the math, and through the totality of your intangibles and your hardcore skills when it comes to some of the math, you know, they can make an informed decision about whether or not you'd be a good fit at their firm. These often are 3 to 4 rounds of interviews. They typically begin with a behavioral interview, and then the later rounds tend to be heavier on the cases. And I think for students that want to be in that field and want to work the long hours and do the hard data analysis, and work often with some people who are under heavy stress, it can be a very rewarding career path. But it's also not for everybody, right? Does that help a little bit, Graham?
Yeah, no, that's super helpful. I think one of the things you said that's really interesting and does resonate is that, you know, schools are increasingly, certainly during the pandemic, some of the standardized testing has kind of gone out the window, or, you know, schools are being incredibly flexible about, you know, accepting a whole range of tests. And so, you know, if you then look flash forward to when someone's going to be recruiting for consulting, they may not have, as you said, the numbers that, you know, that used to be kind of in every file way back when. So yeah, that makes sense. But I think it's also just really interesting to hear your take on what it is, because I actually, when I did my MBA, it was a great mystery to me too. I knew that a lot of people wanted to go work at McKinsey or these other top kind of consulting firms, but I never had a clear grasp before I arrived at business school as to like, what did they really do? And it wasn't until, you know, like connecting with career services and other people on campus that I got a handle on it. So that's really helpful. What about tech? Because tech is the other, as I mentioned earlier, you know, there's so many candidates that, you know, they have the usual suspects on their target list. They want to go work at Amazon or Apple or Google or any of the big companies. But what is, like, how does that process differ from the consulting process? I mean, I presume they're not doing case interviews, but I don't really know. I mean, how many interviews does one have to get a job at some of these companies, and how does it work?
Yeah, well, yeah, they actually can do case interviews. It's interesting. I think, you know, what's fascinating about that, Graham, is that tech isn't a job, right? It's an industry. And I think one of my biggest challenges to students is, what's the work that you want to do? Like, when someone comes in and says, I really want to be in tech, I'm like, great. I really want to work for Google. Right. Awesome. What's the impact that you want to have? Like, what's the job that you want to have? And I think it's interesting, because a lot of times I get that blank stare back, like, well, what do you mean? I want to work for Google. I'm like, yeah, I know. But Google's a company, right? They have people who do finance. They have people who do marketing. They have people who do product innovation and design. They have people in HR, right? They build products. And so they have, you know, process engineering, supply chain, distribution, et cetera. What's the work? Like, what's Google going to pay you to do? And so I think when you ask about how's the recruiting process different, it differs by role. And so I think for people who want to work in an industry that's heavy technology, you still have to be able to figure out, like, where are you going to fit? If you go into marketing, or if you go into strategic finance, or if you go into HR, you're largely looking at processes that are very different to retail banks or consumer packaged goods firms or manufacturing firms, where it's fairly heavy on behavioral interviewing and your fit with the culture, your knowledge of the industry and the products, your ability to see where trends are going, and your ability to connect with your recruiters. But if you want to go into some of the work that resembles a little bit more like consulting work, which might include the title product management, it might include the title business development or new product innovation, then you can expect a process that looks a little bit more like consulting. And product management is probably the most classic example, because product management, again, is really the art of helping within a company, helping an organization think a little bit about where they want to make their investments. And so that's choice and how they want to design products, again, coming down to choice. And so product management actually tends to be pretty heavy on case interviews. A product management case is different than a consulting case. And so, you know, there are a lot of at career offices, we know this, and we subscribe to different resources, and we have different tools to help students prepare for the different types of case interview. But product management is very, very heavy in that. And so I think for that, and the other way to think about tech is that technology is also a tool that a lot of organizations use. And so most people wouldn't necessarily think of a company like Whirlpool as being a technology firm. But if you spend time at Whirlpool, you begin to realize, like, how much technology plays a role in the product design, in the way that they create a positive customer experience. And so I think I really like to challenge people to think about what technology means to them, and maybe think a little bit outside the industry to look for ways that tech influences a positive consumer experience in other companies. And then, of course, at companies like Whirlpool, then they just have their standard interview process that they use for finance. They also use for marketing. They use for people that they hire into product design, where tech plays a role. So it's that, I think, is the sort of dirty secret about tech that a lot of people don't know.
Whether you want to advance in your career or explore new career paths, the number one ranked Kelly Direct Online MBA can get you there. You'll partner with a dedicated career coach to create a path to advancement. They'll provide you with the guidance and tools to help you achieve success now and throughout your career. 64% of Kelly Direct Online MBA students received a promotion while in the program or within 6 months of graduation. The Kelly Direct Online MBA is designed for online students who are busy working professionals. The customizable curriculum enables you to set your own pace. You can take 2 to 4 years to finish and accelerate your career. This is a respected online MBA program with a proven reputation for success. The Kelly School of Business at Indiana University was the first top-ranked business school to offer an online MBA, and is consistently ranked among the best online MBA programs in the world. To start building momentum for your career, visit go.com. www.iu.edu/KDMBA. Yeah, that's really useful information because I think I too get kind of lulled into thinking in these buckets when you're absolutely right. I mean, Google's got people doing everything, right? And you know, similarly, I think on the other side of the coin, you know, people who go into consulting, I think there's this notion that it's sort of a jack of all trades thing. But I feel like over time, a lot of people specialize and they end up doing, you know, strategy consulting in media and entertainment or in a specific domain, finance or oil and gas or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, I think it's really useful for folks to hear this and kind of begin to just dig a layer deeper into what their career plan is. Speaking of which, there are a lot of other things that people do, you know, besides go to a consulting firm or go work for, you know, Microsoft or Google. What are some of those other, you know, I'm thinking like healthcare or, you know, banking or, you know, consumer packaged goods, right? For example, like, are there, do you find that those, the recruiting process for those types of jobs is different? Do people kind of show up later in the pipeline for that stuff because they need to do that extra digging to figure out that that was the path they wanted, or how does it work?
Yeah, dude, I love that you're asking this question, Graham, because it's, I think that what I would say is that when an MBA student steps on campus for the first time and we ask them what their target companies are, it doesn't even matter what school you're at. I mean, I talk to my colleagues once a week and we will tell you to a person, student shows up on campus and we say, what's your top 10 list? And they all say McKinsey, Bain, Boston, Deloitte, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, Starbucks, Apple, and Disney. Maybe Nike, right? Like there's your top 11 firms. And it's no surprise, right? They're the most admired companies in the world. And I think that there's this early perception that the admired companies, therefore, are the best companies and the best MBAs end up at the best companies. And so I can show that I am successful if I end up at one of these 11 firms. But they're just companies, man, and they're just jobs mm-hmm. at companies. And Google isn't for everybody. Amazon isn't for everybody. McKinsey isn't for everybody. And I think there are, within those industries, there are smaller companies like Slalom or Axiom that are really amazing consulting firms that people haven't necessarily heard of pre-MBA that they should explore. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks don't think about healthcare, which you brought up, but healthcare might be the most dynamic industry in the world right now. I mean, if you want to talk about marrying impact with complexity, I mean, the person who uses the product isn't the person who makes the decision about the product, and neither of them are the one who pays for the product. And, right. you know, and like, yeah. And you got government regulation and every country is different. Like healthcare is fascinating and complex. And at the end of the day, you're saving lives and that's meaningful. You know, consumer packaged goods is, I mean, yeah, there's like the great companies like Conagra and Procter & Gamble and Clorox and Hershey. But there's also, you know, Clif Bar and Patagonia and Tom's Shoes. And there's so many different ways that you can match your individual values up with the way that companies choose to do business. And I think the more you begin to really ask yourself, like, what am I interested in? What are the products and services that I use? What are my passions? What's unique about my values? And then what companies really honor those in the work that they do and the culture that they curate? And if you're willing to lean into those questions, you can come out and you might work for a company that isn't one of the 10 most admired in the world and yet have the most rewarding career because you're doing meaningful work for a meaningful company. And so I really think thinking hard about who you are and who you want to be and targeting companies that value those is the best approach. Always.
Yeah, that makes sense. Really useful advice. I'm hoping that our listeners are taking notes. So tell me a little bit about the internship, because, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of late of like how long should an MBA program last? And you've got more and more online offerings. You've got offerings in Europe that are just 1 year. And so I'm curious, like, where does the internship fit in the grand scheme of things? Like, if I do attend a program that has an internship, like a two-year traditional MBA, do I use that internship to explore something that I'm just curious about? Or does it have to be like, no, you know, spend your summer trying to land that full-time job with the very company that you want to work for post-MBA?
Yeah. Well, I think the question you're asking here is it part and parcel with also like, what's the purpose of an MBA program, right? And I think to answer your question real quick, I think the important thing to point out is for individuals who are getting their MBA, like how big a career change are you trying to make? I think a traditional MBA student in an in-resident two-year program is usually trying to make a fairly significant change in terms of function, in terms of industry, and often in terms of geography. So if you're an engineer who wants to be a consultant, or if you're a salesperson who wants to go into strategic finance, or if you were working and teaching English in Korea and you want to go into brand management, like you got a lot of work you need to do.
Right.
And not just in the classroom, but you actually have to do some experiential learning so that you can learn the acronyms and you can learn how to apply the things that you've picked up in the classroom to the type of work that you want to do post MBA. And so if you're making a fairly sizable pivot, you really need to go to an MBA program where an internship is a possibility. Some of the one-year programs have internships before you graduate. Of course, all the two-year programs encourage an internship between the first and second year. And that internship is really critical for somebody who is making a fairly sizable career change. And I encourage people to attempt to do an internship where the work that they're going to be doing allows them to demonstrate that they have some experience in their full-time interviews in the fall. Mm-hmm. So I don't think the internship, like you can't go farm in another country for a summer and come back and then go after brand management. Like you need to do something over the summer in marketing if you want to be interviewing for marketing jobs in the fall.
Okay.
Or you at least need to be able to connect the dots between the work you did to the work you want to do. I think if you're not looking to make a very big career change, like somebody who's been working at an advertising agency in Chicago or Paris, who wants to go into brand management, you know, a one-year program with a strong reputation in marketing, maybe an MS in marketing, maybe an online program, highly rated that has a marketing degree, that might be a better option for you because that's probably a career pivot that you can make without having to do an internship. And you probably are already an attractive candidate and just don't even realize it yet. And so I think that for the smaller career changes, you might not need an internship and you might just not need a two-year program.
Right.
And that's, I think, the consideration that somebody should be looking at when they're making those decisions.
And that's the other thing that's changed in this, in the domain of kind of graduate management education. At least, I've been in this space since about 95, and you know, the proliferation of specialized masters and kind of one-year offerings and online has just been amazing to see. And I think, you know, obviously a lot of this stuff is going to accelerate with the pandemic because people are, you know, schools have become kind of forced to do more and more things online. But so speaking of that, though, I know that Kelly does actually have a really highly regarded online MBA. It's called Kelly Direct Online. But how does like career services work for people who are in an online program? Like, is that something that you deal with, or is it a whole separate group that deals with that crowd, or like, how does it work?
Sure. Well, at least here at Kelly, and I can't speak for all the other schools, but at least here at Kelly, the career services for the online program still sit in my office. So, I am in charge of the team that supports all of the programs in our graduate portfolio, including our online MBA. And we do that on purpose because I think there are a lot of shared learnings and benefits, in working together. The online MBA program, is interesting because about 40 to 50% of the students in that are trying to make a career change. But we also have about 40 to 50% who are trying to move up within their company or within their industry. And so what's different for us is that we have to have additional services really to support that second group. The first group gets support that looks fairly similar to our in-residence MBA, right? We have dedicated coaches, we run the workshops, companies. I'll tell you what's changed in the last 20 years is that companies really value the online MBA program now in ways that they didn't before. Mm-hmm. They love the quality in these programs right now, the students, the quality of the education, because it's now being offered by accredited universities, top programs like ours. And they love that a lot of these students have experience in their industries and can start a new job anytime. Mm-hmm. Like they don't have to make an offer in October for a job that starts the following July. They can make an offer in October and get somebody on December 1st. And so the recruiting of the online student is fairly aggressive right now. Mm-hmm. And we do try to support our students to make sure they're ready right. when they want to go and interview. But for that second group, we also offer a lot of we have some classes that we offer about how to manage your career within an industry. That's where, you know, I mentioned it, or you mentioned, I guess, at the beginning of this podcast that I'm a certified executive coach. My team, everybody on my team is a certified executive coach. And that's a skill set that we can use as we're trying to help young leaders really better manage their career within their industry. It's helpful with working with all students, but it really comes in helpful when we're working with that online program that's trying to move up within their organization, and helping them think about how to balance their potential versus their performance and build a strong developmental action plan. That's a lot of cool work that we do there. So it's different because the students have different career ambitions. But for those who are trying to, you know, make a change, typically not as big a change as an in-resident student, but for those who are trying to make a change, it looks fairly similar.
Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. I think, you know, one of the things that we've kind of danced around a little bit is the pandemic and you know, COVID-19 and what it's sort of the elephant in the room. Like how is, like what's happened to the job search process for MBAs, whether they're, you know, in an online program or full-time, like what's going on? I mean, I'm assuming it's been a little bit of ebb and flow too. Like I'm guessing that things may have looked different last March when the pandemic was just taking hold versus now that we're many months into it and companies have shifted to remote work but how are things going? Like how does your staff deal with this?
Yeah, well, it's definitely been interesting. I'll tell you that. I think the two biggest impacts have been certain industries have gone on fairly significant hiring freezes or furloughs or layoffs, while other industries have really thrived. And that's really been where the impact has hit the MBAs the hardest. So for the graduating class of 2020, for those who had their jobs locked up by March, by and large, they didn't really experience much disruption. Those that were going into consulting did have their start dates pushed back. But most everybody else started their jobs on time and remotely. If they didn't have a job lined up by April, it took 5-6 months before most of them were able to find something because of the hiring freezes and the uncertainty. Now, as it's rebounded, what we've seen is that industries like healthcare or online retail, so Walmart, Target, Tesco, and you know Amazon, companies like that, they're hiring like you wouldn't believe. Yeah. I mean, Amazon's trying to hire 100,000 people right. this year. And so there are enormous opportunities there, whereas other businesses like hospitality and tourism, you know, Marriott, Starwood, places like that, Disney, et cetera, they've really pulled back on recruiting. And you know, the big hairy beast that we're really trying to watch closely is consulting, because they, by and large, are not interviewing MBA students this fall for full-time jobs. They do have plans to interview MBA students in the spring for internships. But for most of them, they're, as I mentioned earlier, the students who graduated in May, June, haven't even started in their consulting roles yet and won't until January or February. And so we're watching that industry closely to see how quickly they get back to work and whether or not the full-time jobs are going to be there for the class of 2021 and then also for the class of 2022. And it's just hard to say right now. That industry is really running a tight ship.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I think, this has just been a really challenging time. And it's been so fascinating, too, to see, like you're saying, the likes of, you know, I was shocked when I guess it was Apple reported their, you know, quarter earnings or whatever, you know, right, for the quarter that was during the heart of the first kind of wave. And they kind of, you know, blew through all the guidance and did really well. But then you have other industries, like you're saying, like Marriott or whoever, that are just really struggling. So it'll be, yeah, I guess we'll just keep an eye on this. I did want to have a little bit of time in this episode to talk about tips that you've got for folks who are just beginning their MBA journey. You know, most of the people listening are, you know, maybe they've started to apply or in the process of trying to get into a program. And then there are others who are, they're still a year out, you know, they're really kind of formulating a career plan and You know, which degree is going to be the right, you know, like what's the right path? What are the right schools to look at? So I guess I'm just wondering, like, do you have any general advice for folks in terms of, you know, we hear all kinds of things like, should I quit my job once I get into business school and like go do some kind of a pre-MBA internship? Or, you know, when should I start prepping case interviews if I know I want to work in consulting and all these things? So how would you, like, what advice would you give to somebody who's, you know, a year out from even, you know, starting business school?
Yeah. So the word that I would use to sort of summarize that is discovery. And I would say it's self-discovery and it's market discovery. From a self-discovery standpoint, I think the most important thing that somebody can do pre-MBA is really get honest with themselves about why am I unsatisfied, right? Like, the base assumption here is somebody is, you're choosing to quit a job, you're choosing to invest 2 years, 1 year, and, you know, several hundred thousand dollars into a degree. You're doing that for a reason. So why are you unsatisfied right now? What's unsatisfying about your career path? What's unsatisfying about the work you do? What's unsatisfying about where you live? What's unsatisfying about what your company has told you is your potential? Like, but be honest and be honest about your role in that. And then as you look forward, like what would make you happy? And not a title, but like, you know, who do you admire? What work do you see getting done that you think looks pretty cool? Not what other people tell you is cool, but like when do you feel energized when you're watching people do something important? Like, take notes on that. Talk to people who know you. Ask them, hey, when you see me really excited, what am I talking about? Or when you need my help, you know, what are the reasons you come to me for advice? Like, those are such powerful clues as to what your skills are and what your interests are. And I think, you know, beyond that, do some networking, right? Talk to people at your company. Talk to alums of the schools you're thinking of going to. Talk to people in your community who go to your church or, you know, or work at your gym. Ask them what they do. Ask them what they like about it. Ask them what they think of their company. Like do that kind of work. I don't love pre-MBA internships. I don't think you need to quit your job early and try to do research on it. I think these are just normal, like, time for self-reflection and time for networking can really be powerful and can be done in the evenings and on weekends. I don't ever think there's a bad time to start practicing case interviews. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't prioritize that over doing some of this other work. And I think if you do those things, if you get honest with yourself and if you really spend time talking to people who are in the world of commerce and doing work so that you can find out what's interesting to you and what's not, then I think you can show up on campus and hit the ground running.
Okay, that's good advice. Yeah, I remember the days when before I did my MBA, the big debate was, you know, you take a couple months off before business school starts and where are you going to go travel? Now it's like more people seem more kind of professionally minded and are kind of saying, where am I going to what am I going to do to get ready for the, you know, post MBA job hunt? So, but I agree that, you know, taking this time to reflect is great advice. One last question I had for you is, I'm kind of wondering, what is it that you think makes Indiana Kelly, you know, unique in terms of like your approach to career guidance and coaching, or even just in terms of the overall program? And because I, you know, just would love to hear a little bit about that.
I mean, I hope I was able to put it on display some. I think our biggest approach is really the idea of customized coaching. Mm-hmm. I think those are the two words that stand out to me about what we do. It's the ability to treat each student as an individual, to embrace each student's own career path. We don't force anybody into one job or another. We don't have incentives to send people to target companies or not. I think it's really about, you know, not just helping a student get a job, but helping them get a job they can be successful at. And we know that success is driven by passion, driven by a skills fit, driven by a culture fit. And so we spend a lot of time, actually, before students even get on campus, we have a program called Me Inc., which is, you know, 40 hours of in-depth research on oneself and on networking and some of the things that we talked about to help people really think through these things that you and I have talked about. And then once folks show up on campus, we try to treat them as an individual, develop individual career plans. Everybody gets different recommendations as far as what companies they should look at based on their skills, interests, and values. And I think that customized coaching approach has been one of the biggest reasons why we're consistently one of the top three in the world with regard to student satisfaction and offer and acceptance rates. And that's something I'm really proud of. So,
yeah, and you should be. I mean, I think it is interesting. Some of the really large MBA programs don't have a super customized approach. I feel like there's sort of a bucketed approach where it's like they just try to group everyone into, okay, you guys are going to be the consulting people. You go to these workshops and you'll go do your interviews and, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it sounds really unique to me in terms of what I've heard from other schools. So that's great. I do want to thank you a lot for, you know, pitching in here and helping me dig into this topic, which, you know, we actually did. You mentioned you like market research and we did some research with our listeners and they said they wanted to hear more about kind of post MBA career outcomes. And so we said, okay, great, but we don't know what we're doing there. So appreciate you coming on to help shed light. I think, yeah, this has just been a real learning experience for me and I'm sure for most of our listeners too. So thanks so much for taking the time, Eric.
Hey, well, I'm honored that you asked, Graham. Thanks so much to you as well.
All right, so everyone stay tuned. We've got more episodes like this coming up. We've heard your requests and we're going to keep having special guests and you know, kind of one-off episodes where we discuss this kind of stuff. But thanks again for listening and we'll see you on the next episode of the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast.